Micah chapter 6, verses 6 through 8. The text of our lesson reflects a certain position relative to the Scriptures. It's the idea that questions are raised that challenge the hearers to properly see the big picture. And that's something that happens on several occasions throughout the Old Testament and New Testament. There is a series of, I have to call them rhetorical questions in verses 6 and 7. They know what the answer is, so the questions are asked then for effect. When you see, you know, with what shall I come to the Lord and bow myself before the God on high? Well, rhetorical question. First of all, you know, God wants you and your obedience. But then it goes on to say, what about these other things? What about yearly burnt offerings and yearly calves? And what about that? Well, those are things that God requires of man, but that's not what it's all about. He goes on to say, what about the thousands of rams and 10,000 rivers of oil and presenting my firstborn? Well, if that's what the Lord requires, that's fine. But, you know, it's what's behind these things. I think sometimes to myself it's somewhat similar to what you find in the New Testament. That God isn't as much interested in what's being done as why it's done. Now, the what's important, don't get me wrong. For example, I think when we partake of the Lord's Supper, that there ought to be unleavened bread and the fruit of the vine there. I don't think we ought to have hamburgers and potato chips. It ought to be what it ought to be. The what's important, that's right. But what's a little bit more important behind that is the fact that God expects us to be obedient. And behind the partaking of the Lord's Supper, as we all probably understand, is remembering the Lord and His death. So this is what happens repeatedly throughout the Bible. A number of things are done or things are offered, etc., to determine what one's faithfulness is and so on. Now just for a little bit before we started singing, I got to thinking about this passage and where it talks about the thousands of rams and other things like that. And you reflect on the Old Testament, and there were a lot of cattle, and there were sheep or goats that were used in the giving of sacrifices. I think in our present day culture, it's just animals, what we think. But back in Old Testament times, animals, herds and flocks were a mark of affluence. Abraham, for example, was a very wealthy man. How is he described as a wealthy man? Well, like most nomadic tribes, clans of people in those days, Abraham didn't own any land, but he had a lot of livestock. It was the livestock that determined whether one was wealthy or not. And from the amount of the livestock, Abraham was a wealthy man. And so was Job, wasn't he? Well, it was all taken away from him. But at the end, it was restored to him again. And he was once again a wealthy man. So, these sacrifices that are being offered, they cost something. They meant perhaps more to them than we might think it does, because we have a tendency to look at it superficially. So this was something that was a big deal when he asks in here, does the Lord take delight in thousands of rams? Look at what all this cost. Yes, but the Lord wants something greater than that, doesn't he? And he even answers this. Now, in broad terms, when he says, well, you do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with your God. Those are broad terms. So asking a certain number of questions and then receiving an answer that's kind of, you know, in the broadest of terms is what happened here. But that's not the only occasion where something like this takes place. Turn to Matthew chapter 22. In Matthew chapter 22, I think we see a similar case here. Verse 35. One of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? And he said to him, You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. Great or and first, some translations have. The second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets. When you take a look at this, you see in verse 35, the lawyer is looking for a specific answer. The story goes that among the Jews, the scribes and the Pharisees, doctors of the law, lawyers, they would sit around trying to figure out which was the most important commandment. So this was kind of a common question. Now, apparently, and I've never checked this out, I just take the word so large, I'm not going to spend my time. Apparently, they come up with a number of 613 commandments in the Old Testament. That's why I've never bothered to check them all out. I'll take the big number. If it's off, give or take 10, that's fine. You can see it's a huge number. And out of that huge number, you going to pick one? Well, no doubt hardly. That's not it. Because they got an answer in a broad way, didn't they? Now, Jesus answers the question with the broad terminology. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. There's the one first and the second. But still, even though he gets two answers, they didn't get the one they wanted. He got two of them, but they're still in broad terms. You could say to yourself, what's loving your neighbor? What's all that in? Well, whatever it is. And how about loving the Lord thy God with all your heart and your soul and your mind? What about that? Whatever it is. That's how it is. And really, I think that this has some bearing on what we're going to be looking at when we discuss the subject of inside and outside. When you look at this and realize that the answers that Jesus gave, the first one here comes from Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 5. The second one, about loving your neighbor, is from Leviticus chapter 19 and verse 18. And you think about this in their broad terminology, they really have a bearing on what you find in the Ten Commandments. Let's go back and look at the context. Go back to Deuteronomy with me. Now, in Deuteronomy, Israel was very close to entering the Promised Land. We're going to go to Deuteronomy chapter 5. Chapter 1. They had been wandering in the wilderness. I did a look at this one time. They wandered in the wilderness for 39 years and 9.5 months. Deuteronomy just covers a period of 2.5 months, about 2.5 months. Leviticus just covers 1 month. Numbers, on the other hand, covers a time whenever they got to a certain place and they stayed there for 38 years. And Exodus covers a little over a year. So they've been wandering for that length of time. And now they find themselves in Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 1, just east of the Jordan River. They were across the Jordan, says there in verse 1, in the wilderness, in Arabah, opposite Suf, between Paran and Tophel and Laban and Hazeroth and Dizahab. And so you see about where they're at. They're trying to give you the geographical location. It's just east of the Jordan River. And there they remain until such a time as there's a change in leadership. Moses no longer with them. Joshua
was the one who led them into the promised land.
While they're camped here, the last thing that Moses is going to do, he's going to give them a review of their history. And he's going to rehearse the Ten Commandments. By the way, the book that this is found in, Deuteronomy, literally means second law. It doesn't mean that there's a second law given, but it means a second time the law is given in a formal setting, if you will. So that takes us over to chapter 4 of Deuteronomy. And verse 1, Israel, listen to these statutes and judgments which I'm teaching you to perform, so that you may live and go in and take possession of the land which the Lord, the God of your fathers, is giving you. You shall not add to the word which I am commanding you, nor take from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you. So Israel is first thing now, urged to keep the law. Verse 29. Same chapter. But from there you will seek the Lord your God, and you will find him. Watch now, if you search for him with all your heart and with all your soul. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Sounds like what Jesus was saying back here. All your heart, all your soul. You give it everything you got. That's right. That's what he means. Then when you get to chapter 5, in chapter 5, verses 1 through 6, where Moses summons all Israel and says to them, basically, what I'm telling you this day, the statutes and the covenants, you need to learn them and observe them carefully. He starts then in verse 7 and goes down through verse 21 and goes over the law again. Now, let's pause for just a moment and reflect on this. The people that Moses is speaking to is a whole new generation. Many of them were not present when the law was given originally at Mount Sinai. But even those who were present at Mount Sinai, there would have been a few. They need to hear this again because you know what? After almost 40 years, it might not be too ready in their mind, would it? Can we not understand that? I have a hard time remembering what happened last Saturday, let alone, 40 years ago. But so we're going to go over this, and it's for everybody's benefit. For those who didn't hear it originally, for those that did hear it, we're going over it again because this is something that's important. And Moses is encouraging them to pay attention to this and to follow the things that are said. I think you find the same practice throughout the New Testament, not with the Ten Commandments being given, but certain things of the gospel. They're given again and again and again and again because some people may not have heard it. And others may have heard it, but they're not paying a lot of attention to it, or they've let it pass. They've let it slip. Whatever happens, it's good to hear things again. But then also, after the giving of the law, there in Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 7 through 21. Remember, Jesus said, you'll love the Lord your God. And the other commandment was, you love your neighbor. Now those are the two. That's what he said. Well, let's look at those as they relate to the law in Deuteronomy, which, by the way, is the same as the one in Exodus. You love the Lord your God. Well, that's Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 5. That's where Jesus picked this up. But what about this loving the Lord your God? How does that square with the Ten Commandments? Well, watch. What are some of the Ten Commandments? You'll have no other gods but Jehovah. There'll be no images. Do not take the Lord's name in vain. And then remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. Now, as those that heard this, Israel, heard these things, and what were they in relationship to? Were these in relationship directly with their neighbor? No,
Their neighbor might influence them not to do these things or to do the wrong thing. But no other gods because, well, you love the Lord your God. You don't make images because you love the Lord your God. You don't take the Lord's name in vain because you love the Lord your God. You remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy because you love the Lord your God. Those commandments deal with Israel's relationship to God. But what's that other one? Well, love your neighbor as yourself. Leviticus 19:18. Look at the rest of the commandments. Honor your father and your mother. Do not murder. Do not commit adultery. Do not steal. Do not bear false witness. Do not covet. Do any of these over here have something to do with your relationship or your dealings, your activities with someone else? Yes. Father and mother. Would they qualify as your neighbor? I guess be close neighbors, wouldn't they? And what about these things like murder and adultery and stealing and false witness and covetousness? They're all done with others. And so this is how this all boils down. The Ten Commandments tells Israel, and by extension tells us, how man has his dealings with God, and then the other part is how man has his dealings with his neighbors. And the New Testament is much like that as well, isn't it? Has a lot in there about how we are to deal with our relationship with God, but also how we are to deal with others. Things like being kind-hearted and gentle and forbearing with others, with our neighbors. Sure. So we see that. So there's how this works with what Jesus had to say in giving his answer to both of those, the great commandments. This is why he's doing this and speaking in these broad terms, because the broad terms cover everything. There's not much more that really needs to be said. And the lawyer, when he heard this, said, "You've given the right answer." Well, there we go. Fair enough, isn't it? But back to Deuteronomy chapter 6. In verses 1 through 24, there's accompanying responsibility here. Now, this is something else. I think that we're living in an age, it seems like, in this secular age that we're in, where accountability has just about disappeared. If something happens, you just can't hardly find anymore someone that's, accountable. No, all the things that happen, and sooner or later, when we're out here examining something and analyzing it so we can understand the situation, other things like that. After we've done all this, frankly, I think a lot of it's psychological mumbo-jumbo, but after we've done all that, I can almost guarantee you somebody's going to come up with the answer and say, "Well, society's responsible for this. Society's accountable for that." How do you hold society accountable? How do you do that? I don't know how you do that. But that's sometimes where we're at today. And even back in Old Testament times, probably people coming up with accountability. But now here's the other thing. If you start whittling away and diminishing accountability, what happens to the thing that comes before that? Responsibility. If I'm not accountable, I'm not responsible. Now people think, if I'm not responsible, that means I'm not accountable. Works both ways. So this is something that we need to consider. In the Old Testament, there might have been some who thought they were neither responsible nor accountable. There might be some today who think that they're not responsible or accountable. But now the Scriptures tell us something different. So what about this responsibility back here in the Old Testament? Well, I see in verse 3, he says there, "Be careful to do it." What would you say would be another thing he's trying to say there? How about this? Get it right. If you're careful when you do it, you're trying to get it right. Now in verse 6, that these things shall be on your heart. Well, I guess you would say, these things are going to be close to you. When we think about this, these Ten Commandments, folks, you know, he's saying they need to be close to you. You need to be close to them. In New Testament times, the commandments of the Lord, they should be close to us. They should be near to our heart and us to them. But sometimes they might not be. There might be times when they're far removed from us. And it's not an easy thing to all of the time, you know, have everything lined up and in the right focus. There could be things come along that's going to scatter our thinking and give us occasions, or what's the word used sometimes, a hiccup when we do certain things. But then we come back around and get things sorted out, and we'll still then do the right things, because if these things are close to our heart, if they shall be on our heart, we'll rebound back to the things that are the closest to us. He also says that you should diligently keep these things that you find. Look at verses 24 and 25 of Deuteronomy chapter 6. I think you see the idea of duty here. So the Lord commanded us to observe all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God for our good always and for our survival as it is today. It will be righteous for us if we are careful to observe all this commandment before the Lord our God, just as He commanded us. So there's a duty. Where there's a duty, there's responsibility. And where there's responsibility, there's accountability. Now, if we look in the middle of Deuteronomy 6, we're going to find something here, I think, that's interesting. This is the inside. Oops, that should be inside now. This is the inside and out part, where the duty is enjoined in verse 6. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 6. These words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. This is individual duty. It's something that you teach it, and also that you live it. So it's inside and out. It's inside, but you practice it outside. We're not talking about something that's just word only here, or that we give lip service to, or say and do not do, or something like that. No, it's serious business. And this is part of your duty to do this. The inside part, you see in Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 7, where you shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit down in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. What's he saying there? Well, he's saying that this is what takes place behind closed doors. It's an interesting expression. Several years ago, it was a country song, kind of a suggestive country song. I don't recommend it. But now that country singer didn't come up with the idea about things that happen behind closed doors. There's lots of things that happen behind closed doors. That's right. Others don't see what goes on behind closed doors. Someone will come along and they'll state the obvious. Well, now we don't know what goes behind closed doors. Right. We don't know because A, we don't have X-ray vision. B, we won't know unless someone tells us what's going on behind closed doors. Or C, we see what's going on behind closed doors. So some things are kind of away from the public. And what's he saying here? Look at the passage again with me now. You're going to teach your sons diligently. Now watch now. You'll talk of them when you sit in your house behind closed doors. That's when you do this. When you walk by the way, and now, and when you lie down, and when you rise up, behind closed doors. So you do this privately. And perhaps even especially when you're at home. I think this is something that's significant. That it's not just, you know, saying things and doing things in a certain way when we're with other brethren. That we practice these things and we practice them at home. So our spouse sees us as we are behind those closed doors. Do you act like a Christian there? And how about with the parents and children? What are your children seeing? Are they seeing, you know, you being a godly individual behind closed doors? Are they being taught behind closed doors? I know sometimes it's easy for people to say, well, so-and-so, they had a couple of kids, and they obeyed the gospel or whatever, and they ultimately fell away in one thing or another. They say, well, they just weren't taught at home. Well, that's easy to say that, harder yet to prove. Because there could be any number of reasons for a falling away. But now I do know this. If they don't see compatible action that can be seen when brethren are gathered together, and they see evidence of this behind those closed doors, it's not going to get across. It's the children who will find out that whether we're hypocrites or not. It's not the people that you see at the post office or at the store or at the restaurant or at school. It's going to be the children. And what are they seeing? You see? And so he's impressing on them. This means all the time is what he's saying here. Now you go down also then to verse 8 and 9. This is the outside part. You'll bind them as a sign on your hand. They shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Now these things are all done. The reason the Jews did all these things, they did these things for reminders, obviously. And they were, though, done public. If you write them on your gate and on your doorpost, they're pretty well public. And if you're carrying these things like the Jews did, they had little boxes. And on those boxes would be a little paper scroll that would have a verse on it. And they would put that in there. And they wore it on their wrist, or they wore it as a headband. And the idea was that this is what you saw this with your eyes, and it reminded you. You know how that kind of thing works. Now, he's not suggesting there that that's something that we need to go out and do. But he is pointing out that while there's an inside part of this, there's an outside part of it as well. I like to think to myself that we're seeing it exercised in other ways, which we'll get to right now. There is an application for these things today. That's right. And I think that this is something that's extremely important. I want you to call your attention to Timothy. Go to 2 Timothy chapter 2. Now we know about Timothy, and he had this high regard from the Apostle Paul. Timothy was in Ephesus doing the work of an evangelist. And Paul writes a couple letters to him to, you know, encourage him in that work. But one of the things we find out about Timothy is in 2 Timothy chapter 2, Second Timothy chapter 3, verses 14 and 15. Now, in Paul's exhortation here, he mentions some teaching that took place in the home with Timothy. You, however, continue in the things you have learned and become convinced of, knowing from whom you have learned them. Now watch. And that from a childhood you have learned, you have known the sacred writings, which are able to give you the wisdom that leads to salvation through faith, which is in Christ Jesus. From childhood, he learned these things. The implication is in the home. Now, we find out in the book of Acts that he learned these things from his mother and his grandmother, Lois and Eunice. So it wasn't just his mother teaching, it was his grandmother as well. So, you know, we don't want to pass this off. Well, I'm just a grandparent, you know. And I don't need to, you know, it doesn't matter. That's the parents. Pass it on. No, there's a responsibility here as well. It worked for Timothy because this is what was being done in the home. He had someone there, he had two people there who were teaching him these things. Now also, we could go to Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, where it says, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger,
but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Now, it could be that fathers there means parents. It would be the same word. But now most translations have fathers. Anyway, we understand that it's the fathers that are to bring up their children in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Whether it's the male member of the household or whether it's the parents, whichever case it is, they need to be brought up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Where's that done? Well, let's see. That's done in high school, isn't it? No. That's done at the daycare center. No. Where's it done? Well, it's done in the home. That's one of the places that it would be done. Now, granted, he could have picked these things up. If he assembled with the saints, he'd be taught there as well. But there's also this other teaching that's done in the home. And it's necessary. Timothy got that. We need to get that. We need to realize this is responsibility. We can't turn this responsibility over to someone else. I can't turn the responsibility of bringing up my children when we were bringing them up to someone else. I'm a grandparent. I've got grandkids. And you know, when I'm around my grandkids, I need to be doing the same kind of things, proper things, good things, that I did with my own children. Or else I'm just going to think they're going to gain it by osmosis or something, just with physical contact. Well, no, that's not going to happen. To learn something, you've got to be taught. To know something, you need to be instructed. Same thing with Timothy, same thing in the Old Testament, same thing in the New Testament. And while we think about this, while there are things that go on, you know, kind of inside, there are things that go on outside as well. Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, take a look at verse 16. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. You let your light shine. It's not that you shine your light on everybody. It's not that you take your light and blind everybody in everybody's eyes. But you let your light shine. You let your light shine. It's just something that comes along naturally. It's not forced. You know, the Bible tells us about practicing humility, for example. When we were in Arkansas, there was a man. He's a member of the church. He'd fallen away. One of these things where, you know, he'd just been every place under the sun one or two times. And he just couldn't find any congregation anywhere that was up to his standards. Can I say that? And so he attended, basically, he didn't attend anywhere. But if you ran into him, I could run into him someplace, like at the restaurant. And he'd all the time trying to impress on you, you know, how humble a man he was. Now, he was making an effort to appear humble. If you make an effort to appear humble, a lot of times you don't look too genuine. But he didn't see me one time when I pulled into the grocery store parking lot. He was talking to a couple men there in the pickup truck. Two good old boys. And he was talking to them like a good old boy. You know what I mean. But I walked by and I guess he heard me or sensed me or something. I don't know. But he turned around just to see what it was. And when he saw me, his whole manner of speaking and acting changed. Like flipping a switch. I thought, isn't that something? Yeah, you let your light shine, but you know what? He had to turn it on. Pick the time to flip the switch. It ought to be on all the time. And no off switch on there. No on switch either. It's on. And people can say, and it's genuine. If it's a part of us, it's the way that we are. We don't have to put on a show. It will show because it's genuine. Look at Philippians chapter 2, verse 15. So that you will prove yourselves to be blameless and innocent, children of God, above reproach, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, watch, among whom you appear as lights in the world. You let your light shine, and you'll stand out. I heard an expression one time, an old preacher said one time,
He's talking about something that stands out. And I thought the way he worded it was really interesting. He said, this stands out, or someone will stand out, like a poodle on a coal barge. Think about it. All that black out there, and there'd be a little poodle. A little bitty old thing. You'd be able to see that from a long way off, wouldn't you? Really stand out. That's right. If you want a better example, and something that many of us may be familiar with, have you ever been in a cave and they turned out all the lights? I worked in a mine for 8 years, and I've had my light go out. Dark, I'm telling you, it was, it's unbelievable dark, isn't it? You put your hand up in front of your face, you put it this close, and you can't see your hand, you can't see anything. And you just get the least little glimmer of light, and that thing will look like there's a lighthouse over there. It stands out. So you let your light shine in the midst of a perverse generation. You'll shine as lights in the world. Don't discount how much your light can shine when it's real and when it's genuine. And while this up here is what's going on the inside in the home, this is outside the home. I know it shines in the home too, but more outside the home when we consider those specific passages. Now another thing, while Israel was told this is the law and you need to keep the law, so are we told today in the New Testament that things are expected of us. We have a duty. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 1. Where Paul says, I, the prisoner of the Lord, implore you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling and which you have been called. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 12 says about the same thing. So that you would walk in a manner worthy of the God who calls you into His own kingdom and glory. Something is expected of you. Something's expected of me to walk worthy. John chapter 15, verse 10. Here's how we do it. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in His love. So if you're walk worthy, you're keeping His commandments. You're abiding in His love when you keep His commandments. That's right. There's something expected of us. We have a duty to perform. Then First John chapter 3 and verse 24. The one who keeps His commandments abides in Him, and He in Him. It's reciprocal action. We know by this that He abides in us by the Spirit whom He has given us. So there's a reciprocal action there. But we're to walk worthy. Now, you know, when you look at these things up there, you think to yourself, those are kind of simple things. And really they are. They're simple things. And I think what gets complicated when we try to do these simple things is because there's so much clutter around. Got the grandkids staying with us this weekend. They go down to the playroom. 5 minutes later, I can go there in the playroom. Kind of hard walking through there. You know? There's a lot of clutter around. That's good. That's grandkids. That's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to play. You know? They're supposed to make a mess. Might not like it. Might grumble and growl a little bit when I step around on one of those little trains or something like that. But you know what? That's kids. That's what they're supposed to do. Kids are supposed to do. And so, you know, it's kind of difficult sometimes. But now here's the other thing. Even in our family room, you can clear the clutter out of the way. Yeah. And then what? Well, it's easier to walk through there. How about our lives if we're trying to do these simple things? You get the clutter out of the way. Or, better yet, don't let it ever get in the way. We've got the control of our situation as to what comes in, what goes out. So, you know, it's our duty to do these things. It's not that somebody's going to come along all of the time and make the way clear for us. And everything. You know, we've got responsibilities. We're going to be accountable for things. Jesus talked about giving a cup of water in my name. He didn't tell them, go out and find somebody else to do it. He said, you do this. A small thing.
things that we can do. I think sometimes we get the idea that, well, I can't do everything that I see that's my duty to do. I can't do everything. You ever feel that way? I can't do everything that's my... You're overwhelmed. That's right. I've been there. I think we've probably all been there. But when you get there, what do you do then? Is it like, well, I can't do all these things, so here's what I'll do. I'll do none of them. I'll just give the whole thing up. That just doesn't make any sense at all. We wouldn't do that in any other, you know, circumstances. But, you know, we would do all we could do. We could do, and we would work on the other things. We'd try to clear up matters, get the clutter out of the way, so our walk would be easier. We could walk worthy. We could let our light shine. We're able to teach our children more. I think it says that, you know, the number one thing that children want, now I'm getting this from psychology, who've done polls on these kinds of things, questions, that the number one things that children want, they don't, you know, they may carry on about you. They may bounce off the car walls, kids and grandkids, when you pass a McDonald's and they think they're going to get a Happy Meal. You know how they are, you know. But that's not really what they want. What they really want is some time with people that mean the most to them, adults, like with parents, and like with grandparents, with family members. That's what really counts. So yeah, you know, there's got to be teaching in the home. There's got to be the example in the home. Timothy saw that. Others see that. We need to realize the importance of this. One more passage, the lesson is yours. 1 John chapter 5, verse 3. This is the love of God, that we keep His commandments, and His commandments are not burdensome. Now that's internal and external there. We love God. There's the internal part. What's the external part? We keep His commandments. How about back there to that lawyer that asked the question? Which ones? Whatever it is, that's what you keep. You keep those commandments. And so we need to think about that. We need to ask ourselves that I may say that I have a great love of God. That's a good thing. That is a good thing. But then are we manifesting that love of God? You see, the commandments we keep are the manifestations of the love of God. So whatever God has commanded us, that's what we ought to be doing. We keep them inside and we keep them outside. If you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, would you repent of your sins? Practice them no more. Turn away from them. Turn to your songbooks. The song's been selected. Would you be willing to confess Him before men? He said, if you'll do that, I'll confess you before my Father in heaven. That sounds like a good deal, doesn't it? And would you be baptized that you might find the forgiveness of your sins and become a child of God? You'd be taking things in inside. You'd be believing and repenting. That'd be inside, wouldn't it? You'd be confessing. That would come from the inside to the outside. And then the act of being baptized for the forgiveness of sins, still on the outside, but look what it does for the inside. Look what it does for the inner man. We'd be happy to help you today. If you're subject to the gospel invitation, why don't you come all together? We stand and sing.